Welcome to Imani State of Mind. If you're looking for a podcast to help get your mind right, laugh with some girlfriends, and learn something new, then you are in the right place. I'm your host, Dr. Imani, and I truly believe taking care of your mind is just as important as taking care of your bodies. So let's take a moment to release everything that last month tried to do to knock us down, because July tried it. But we made it to a new month with new opportunities. Before we get the show started, I want to do a mini check-in on my girl and my favorite co-host, Meg. Meg, what's up with you?
I'm doing good, girl. I'm on the other side of COVID. Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
So, you know, baby's doing good. Kid's doing good. Man's doing good. So my skin's glowing. Okay. I don't have no adult acne right now. I'm happy.
Your skin is glowing. Like, you look super nice. Thank you. Like, you look really, you look really nice today. Yeah.
Thank you. You do too.
Thank you. I don't know why, because, well, remember how I was like, I haven't gotten COVID yet and blah, blah, blah. And y'all out here licking people's faces and coughing in each other's mouths and da, 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 da. And guess who got COVID? Me. Okay. No. I got COVID.
You know what? Don't be mad about it, because I was just reading somewhere that the original COVID, for every like one person who got it, they transmitted it to like 2 to 3 people. And then this new variant, every one infection, like you infected 18 other people.
Let me tell you something.
It's crazy.
I feel like mentally, like, I'm off. I don't know if like that's what you experienced afterwards, yeah. But like I isolated my boyfriend's in the house and my son's in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, Imani, like, you a doctor, you used to work in a lab, like, you know how to quarantine, you know how to, like, you know, do this scientific shit. Like, you can, like no one in this house is going to get COVID except for me. Mm-hmm. And I did it. But the isolation, like,
yeah,
super fucked me up. Like, it's really tough. Like, I feel off, you know?
Yeah.
I went for a walk today for the first time in, like, I guess, like, 10 days. And that was really nice. I was like, oh, my God, like, the air's on my skin. And, like, oh, my God, look at those butterflies. But, like, I'm still kind of, like...
Wait, like, you didn't even go outside, like, to sit during your quarantine?
I did, but, like, I was so weak. Like, I was so weak. I didn't have an appetite. So I was, like... dizzy, and I almost fainted one time, and I was just like, and I really, like, I hate being sick. Like, I just, yeah, I hate being sick. So I was like, I've done everything. I did everything I was supposed to do. I'm still the only person, I feel like, in a store with a mask on. Like, I'm just like, I'm not, like, get away from me. Like, I'm not trying to get that, but I got it. And I'm grateful. Listen, everybody out here who is like, I'm tired of wearing masks and, da, 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 and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, listen, like, whatever COVID was about in 2020, like, when that shit first came out, when COVID first dropped, and then people was dying in the hospital because they literally were, like, drowning in their own, like mucus, like, in their lungs. Like, it didn't bother me. It didn't affect my chest, but, like, my head was awful. This I never, ever, ever, ever want to feel that way again. So, I'm just happy that I'm better. I'm happy that, you know, my skin looks nice today. I don't know why. Probably because I haven't eaten.
Girl, you don't look like a COVID patient. You look good.
Well, thank you. I'm like, I lost some weight. I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, now, here's the thing. I love to eat. I'm not somebody who doesn't not eat, but, like, I've just been eating, like, bagels, like, left and right, because I got to get my weight up, something. I feel so, like, off. But in any case, enough about me.
There's going to be a brain fog, I was going to tell you, because I still have the brain fog from when I had it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I notice, like, sometimes when because I'm usually, like, really quick.
Yeah.
And, like, lately, I've been, like, the last word of my sentence, I'd be like, what is that word?
Yeah.
Like, it's from COVID.
Yeah.
But hopefully it goes away, because I can't be doing this. Okay. I don't like that feeling.
Yeah. I was just mad worried. I was like, what if I get long COVID? And it was, for somebody who's prone to worrying, like, being alone and sick And like, uh-huh. finally today, legit, I was like, you can't like I would just, you know, be in my news app looking at stories and I'm like, you can't read nothing else about COVID. Like, that's it. Right. it brings me down. Like, it just makes me feel like I'm back at where I was. So everybody out there who's dealing with COVID right now, whether you got it or a loved one's got it, like, I am so sorry. This BA.5 or whatever, Omarion variant is not to be played with. Like, listen, no. I am sorry. I hope everybody out there is staying safe. And please wear your mask, because then, you know, we wouldn't get sick and stuff. So anyway, enough about me. But never enough about you. That being said, so listen, last month, it was all about the relationships we have in our life. Like, what are the people in our lives really saying about how we value or upkeep our mental health? I hope you really took a deep look into your own relationships to get your answers. This month, we are still going to keep it real, but we are evaluating the substance or the state of things as they actually exist. What's your reality?
Now, we've been there where we create these fantasies in our head of how we think certain situations should go instead of trying to face the facts of how they really are. This month, we're facing the facts so we learn how to deal, cope, and grow with the situations we're faced with.
So without any further ado, let's get to the show. We want to kick the show off by hearing from you. What's on your mind? It's time for Ask Dr. Imani Anything. Meg, who does our letter come from today?
Today's letter is from Alex, and here is what she had to say. Dear Dr. Imani, I am pregnant with my second child, and unlike my first, I am not excited about being pregnant this time around. I feel so guilty just saying this out loud. For my first child, I did the baby announcement, gender reveal, and big lavish shower. My pregnancy was as smooth as it could be, and my son slept through the night on most nights starting out, so I have no reason to dread this pregnancy. It's been a dream of mine to be a mother, so I'm confused why I'm dreading being a mom for the second time. Most days, I find myself crying that I'm pregnant. I get anxiety thinking about having this second child. I have no energy or desire to get the nursery together and have no interest on knowing the baby's sex. I basically have no interest in anything baby related at all. Both my son and my husband are excited for our new addition, so most days I pretend I'm excited too. But to be honest, I feel no connection with my baby bump and can't wait to push this baby out to give to my husband. Could these feelings be signs I will have postpartum depression once the baby's here? Is this abnormal to not have a connection with my baby yet? How can I get out of this funk and get excited for my new baby blessing? Please help.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, legit. I mean, okay. So I usually talk a lot. But Meg, I know that, like, we've talked before and you said that you've experienced postpartum depression. All I'm going to say, I'm just going to say real quick, because Meg, I kind of want you to, like, lead this one. Is that I had prepartum depression. And so I was really depressed during my pregnancy. And then as soon as I pushed my son out of my body, I was like, yay, it's over. Like, I just really did not enjoy being pregnant. But Meg, I know that you've dealt with postpartum depression. So is there anything that Alex said that kind of resonated with you?
Oh yeah, for sure. This whole thing. But I was going to say, I mean, this is how she feels before she has a baby. So she might have the same situation as you with the prepartum depression, and then may feel different once the baby's out. But, you know, I remember when I was pregnant with my son, I didn't really have too much prepartum depression. Definitely postpartum. You know, one of the things she said is that she felt no connection with her baby bump. I felt a connection with my baby bump, but I didn't feel a connection with my baby when he came out. And I felt bad about that because I felt like, you know, on TV, women push the baby out and they're crying and they're like, oh my God, I love you so much.
Right.
I pushed him out and was like, oh my gosh, hey, like, what's up, dude? Like, he was in my stomach this whole time. Like, welcome to the world. You know, it was like, I was more in awe of my son than like super in love with him. Cause it was like, I mean, the truth is, I don't know this man. He don't know me either, right? Yes, he was in my body.
right.
This baby, no. He, you know what I'm saying? But it was like, it's like, we got to get to know each other. This is a new life for both of us. And so I think we need to give moms some grace, because I don't think all moms feel like that from the very beginning. No. You know, it was a little bit different with my daughter, but for my first child, my son, it was just kind of like, you know, I was so terrified of like, can I keep him alive? You know, mm-hmm. like, is he breathing? Is he getting the best nutrition? I was so terrified of everything that I just, you know, I think I drove myself kind of crazy trying to be perfect for him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was tough. But I will say that now I am, you know, on the other side of it. I could tell you that if you have to ask, do you think you're going to have postpartum depression? You probably have it because you probably know some of the signs, you know. And so if you do, there's no shame in getting help. Because I will tell you, I probably had postpartum depression way longer than I should have because I saw the signs and I didn't get help. I was just like, dang, this mm-hmm. is postpartum depression. Mm-hmm. And just left it like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's something that you said that really like hit me, which is, you know, I mean, yes, in every society, in pretty much every culture, it's, well, oh, you know, you're going to be a mom, like, oh my God, this is the best thing that ever happened. And I mean, as far as like, that's what we're told and that's what we're taught, like what we should be emulating in terms of like, right. oh my God, this is going to be the best thing. And like, you know, this is so magical. And like, oh my God, I'm totally in love with this baby. I mean, listen, I will be completely honest. Like when I was pregnant, I hated it. And this is from somebody who I didn't have a difficult pregnancy. Like it, like yeah. I watched all the Law and Orders that ever were made. But I was also like mad depressed. And the reason why I was really depressed is because as crazy as this sounds now, I felt like a failure. Like I felt like, okay, I was like, Imani, you are a full-fledged doctor. I was in residency. Of course, when I was pregnant, there were like a bunch of other like female residents at the time who were also pregnant. And mm-hmm. like all of them were married. I wasn't married. I didn't mm-hmm. really know my son's father very well. And I just felt like I was a big failure. Like I felt like, wow, like you did all this so that you could like basically be a single mom. Nothing against single moms. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is I felt like I was still very much victim to, okay, so you're going to do all your schooling. You're going to find the perfect dude. You're going to get married. You're going to have a kid. And obviously that's not what happened. And adding on top of that, the fact that I'd been depressed for years, mm-hmm. years. I'd been depressed definitely since college. And so now I was what, 30? So
Were you getting treatment for this or you knew you were depressed?
No. Oh, okay. I was just depressed. When I was pregnant, I still had to be on call at the hospital. Like I had to work overnights. Like it was really rough. And on top of that, like I said, I really didn't, like I'm somebody who at that point thrived on planning. Like mm-hmm. I'm a doctor. I'm gonna do this. This is what I'm gonna do today. I made a list. I made little check boxes. You know, like everything was great. And then here I am, you know, basically pregnant by some dude I didn't really even know like that. You know what I mean? And so I tried to view it, you know, lots of different ways. But for me, I just felt like a really big failure. But then once I had my son, I was like, oh my God, like you look at your face. We got the same face. Oh my God. I didn't think like my son's father's Puerto Rican. He's more fair skinned. And I was like, oh my God, like I made a clone. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was just like, oh my God, like this, like, I was like, my son has my face and he's so light skinned. Like, I was like, I can't believe, like, I was just like, genetics is wild. And then like the human body is crazy. I was just, I was just so in awe of that. Now, mm-hmm. I was terrified. Like, it sounds like you were too after you had your son, your first child, because I'm going to tell you right now, when I pushed my son out. I gave birth at home. And so I had like two midwives and like a doula. My mom was there. And so I was just like, whew, okay, you know what? I'm gonna go take a shower. So they kept like knocking on the door, like, yo, you need to come outside. You need to bond with your son. And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna bond with my son. But I was like, can I just like wash my ass real quick? Like, I just had like a whole baby, like calm down. So I was like, y'all relax. Like we gonna bond. Like, trust me, like I'm gonna be there for like the rest of his life. Okay. Like everybody calm down. But like, this was the funniest part to me. So So like I push my son out and then, you know, they hand me this baby. I'm an only child. I don't have siblings. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to hold a child at this point, like a baby. And, you know, they necks are all over the place. And they were like, okay, here you go. And I was like, okay, what? I was like, I don't know what you're trying to do. I'm like, you probably should put him on a bed or something. Cause I'm not really there yet to be trying to like hold this like fragile new earthling. You know what I mean?
I'm not there yet.
Yeah, I was like, oh no, like you might need to. I was like, why don't you lay him down for a second and then, you know, like we can practice this. And they were like, Imani, no, like you have to do this. And I was like, I don't know how to do any of this. So it was.
That's so funny.
I say all that to say that it's having a baby is very overwhelming. I mean, let's not even talk about the physicality of it, right? It's one thing, like when I gave birth to my son, I was like, okay, so, or I'm sorry, when I was pregnant, I was like, okay, so I'm gonna have him and then it's gonna be over. But it's not over. It'd be one thing if like, it's kind of like you do a triathlon and then you get to like go chill afterwards. But when you have a baby, like that's when it starts up.
Yeah.
Even though you just went through this incredibly like physical, like body altering, because your pelvis, like your pelvic bones, like come apart, right? Yeah. They come apart, and then there's the hormones, there's mm-hmm. all the other things that you're dealing with, and then it's like, oh, here's this brand new like sack of like flesh sack. They can't communicate with you. The eyes don't open. They sleep all the time. Like I was just like, this is the craziest shit. Like I was like, I don't even understand why people have more than one child. Like this is crazy. So anyway, Alex, to your letter. Okay. Let's go back to your letter. You are naturally overwhelmed. You have a child already. You're pregnant. Just so you're aware, like if you're not really into like having another baby shower, I think that's okay, because do a lot of people have baby showers for their second baby?
Some do, some don't. It just depends.
Yeah, like most people.
I mean, I did, but like the stuff that I put on the registry was like diapers. But the first one, it was like, I need this. Right. I need like a million more things, but you don't really need it. So, I mean, I think it just depends, you know, but I don't think she should feel bad about that. But I do think she should talk to her doctor about like, you know, her feelings, because like you said, she might have prepartum depression.
Yeah.
And it may go away.
Exactly.
Or it may not.
Right. I would, I mean, if I had to do it again, I definitely would have opted to take an antidepressant when I was pregnant. And there are a number of antidepressants that you can take when you're pregnant. There are a number of antidepressants you can take even if you choose to breastfeed your baby afterwards. So mm-hmm. I wish for certain that I would have opted to get mental health help when I was pregnant and also afterwards, because I felt better, but I was still mm-hmm. depressed, which meant that I was still making like really dumb decisions, not about my son, but just about my life in general, like choosing to try and have a relationship with my son's father, who I really didn't know. And surprise, it didn't work out, because I was like, I don't even know who you are. And at the end of the day, I really don't even like you as a person. So, you know, like, it's just like, I was just making like wild decisions, bad decisions. But Alex, you're like, I understand the pain that you're feeling. Like, you definitely sound depressed. I really just think, like Megan said, you need to like talk to your doctor. Like, you really need to talk to your doctor. You need to get to a better place so that you can realize kind of like where me and Megan are now, that none of this is your fault. This is very overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just talked about, like, me and Megan just talked about like how devastating mentally COVID can be. And that did not involve pushing a baby out of our body. Right. This was just because we didn't feel good, like physically. You're dealing with hormones. You're dealing with, you know, just like, I don't even know what it would be like to be pregnant and pick up another child, like physically. Right.
It's not fun. Okay. It's not fun. You'd be wanting to give them both away. I'm just saying.
Exactly. Right. And so I'm just like, Alex, like, girl, like it is okay. Like you have done nothing wrong. If you're not excited about your baby right now, that is okay. Like you're mm-hmm. going to be okay. Your new baby's going to be okay. I just think that you should, you know, you're going to go through these feelings and having pangs of guilt. But I think the most important thing is that you just talk to your doctor and tell your doctor how you're feeling, because I know a couple people who also had prepartum depression, and once they got the help they needed, it really, really, really made a difference for them. So, and I've had patients who were pregnant and were depressed, and I've had patients who were not pregnant. They had had their baby and they were depressed, and you know, just a little bit of medication in these people's cases really made a huge difference. So, you know, I wish you the best. This is the way that you're feeling has an endpoint. You just need to talk to your doctor and you need to just like get the help that you need. So,
and I would also say, I would add one more point, give yourself grace. It is okay. Yes. You don't have to be a woman who is so excited to have a baby. Embrace how you feel, because trust me, there are a lot of women who feel the same way. They just are too afraid to say it. So just understand it's okay. You don't have to be interested in having a baby at all, but I would suggest you find a therapist or a, you know, psychiatrist, somebody you can talk to about your feelings before the baby's born, because it'll make things easier once the baby is born to have that person to kind of be honest with and tell your feelings to.
Yeah. I mean, actually, I just thought about, this is random, but there is a, I guess, I don't know if I would use the word tribal, but there's kind of like a society in China, and they are kind of, they're very much off the grid. And so in this particular culture, it's matriarchal, but also like women have babies, but like literally as soon as those babies can kind of like walk, they quote unquote give those babies to all the, like all the kids in the village raise themselves.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. So it's kind of like we have this expectation in our society where it's like, oh, you know, like you're a terrible mom if you're not all up in your baby face, if you're not, you know, always trying to like, you know, create like, you know, Instagram moments and knitting socks and all this other stuff that ain't nobody got time for. Like,
right,
you really think about it, when I was thinking about this society, they like the women basically are like, okay, I did what I had to do. Okay. Like I did what I had to do. I brought a life into this world. And you know what? Like y'all little kids can go raise each other and I'm going to go do what I have to do, which is adult things. And I, you know, I bring that up because Alex, you are being overwhelmed with a lot. And I think a lot of also what you're being overwhelmed with is just societal expectations. And, and like, you know, like Megan said, like, give yourself some grace, like stop being so hard on yourself. It's going to be okay. There is an end point, but you just have to like find a doctor and do the work and you'll feel a lot better soon. And honestly, if you have the time to, you know, give us an update on how you've been doing after you had your baby, please let us know, because we're both moms and we've both been there, and it does get better. It does get better, but you just have to go through the motions and do the work. So I wish you the best. I know Megan wishes you the best too.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. And let us know how you're doing. So, Alex, thank you so much for submitting your question, and I really hope that we were able to help you. Today's question is a great segue into our deep dive topic for this week. Today, we're going to be talking about the realities of postpartum depression. According to the National Alliance of Mental Illness, 1 in 8 new mothers will be affected by postpartum depression, but the risk is significantly higher for new mothers of color. Then to add to that, while Black women are more likely to have postpartum depression, they are less likely to receive help. Meg and I have so much we want to say about this topic, and we're going to dive right in after we take this quick break. Imani's State of Mind is brought to you by Apostrophe. Do you ever feel overwhelmed by the amount of choices there are out there? Whether you're shopping for cereal or toilet paper, there are so many options, and it's hard to know what's best for you. When it comes to finding skincare products that actually work, it's even more overwhelming. Recently, I was trying to find skincare products for my son, because he's a teenager now, and it was just a bit overwhelming just standing in the drugstore trying to figure out what to get him. Finding skincare products that actually work for you is complicated, and that's why we are excited to partner with Apostrophe, the sponsor of this episode. Apostrophe is a prescription skincare company that provides access to oral and topical medications that use clinically proven ingredients to help clear acne. At Apostrophe, an expert dermatology team will create a personalized treatment plan that is perfectly tailored to your unique skin. Simply fill out Apostrophe's online consultation about your skin goals and medical history. Then snap a few selfies and a board-certified dermatologist will create your first customized treatment plan. Apostrophe treats all types of acne, from hormonal acne to facial acne, and even chestnut, backne, and buttne. They treat breakouts from head to toe. My skincare goals personally are to try and treat my dull acne and also reduce dark spots. What I really liked about Apostrophe was the whole service experience. I was really happy knowing that my treatment plan was from a real dermatologist and that my plan was tailored for me. We have a special deal for our audience. Get your first visit with an Apostrophe provider for only $5 at apostrophe.com/mind when you use our code MIND. That's a savings of $15. This code is only available to our listeners. To get started, just go to apostrophe.com/mind and click begin visit. Then use our code MIND at sign up and you'll get your first visit for only $5. Thank you, Apostrophe, for sponsoring this episode. Welcome back. I'm eager to be getting into this topic of postpartum depression, which is a condition in which a new parent may experience constant feelings of sadness, emptiness, low energy, anxiety, irritability, and poor sleep or appetite. I remember a few years ago, I was having a conversation with my own mom, and she mentioned to me that she believed she had postpartum depression. It made me realize that she's a regular person like me, but it also made me think how many other women may be or think they are going through something like postpartum depression who don't have someone to have the conversation with. Some researchers have suggested as many as 50% of women with postpartum depression or PPD do not report it. I'm hoping our conversation today will help normalize having conversations centered around PPD, especially with my fellow Black women. I know, Meg, that you mentioned on the show a few times before about your own personal experience with postpartum depression. Can you tell us a little bit more about your story?
Yeah, you know, when I had my son, I, you know, like I said earlier, I wanted to be so perfect. And I think I set myself up for failure because I wanted him to have the best of everything. I want to be the best mom, you know, but I didn't feel those touchy-feely things that you're supposed to, quote-unquote, supposed to feel when the baby comes. So I already felt like a failure when he was born. Like, why didn't I cry when he was born? Like, why? What's wrong with me? You know, and then from there, it was hard. I realized that a lot of times postpartum depression also has to do with you not feeling supported in some way. Like, for example, I lived halfway across the country away from family, I didn't have a lot of help. I didn't have a big village. So, you know, when you're dealing with all the raging hormone, you know, the hormones are levels are trying to figure out where they're supposed to be in your body, dealing with the crying baby, lack of sleep, nipples hurting, you know, you're dealing with all this.
I'm like, and then ow. I don't have right. I'm like, you and then, just reminded you know, me. I'm like clutching my chest.
Girl, I'm saying this as my boobs hurt right now. Okay.
Right.
Like, I did it again. Oh Lord. You know, all of this stuff. And then I didn't have anybody to talk to because I felt like if I talked about it, then that would be me being a failure. And every time, you know, after you have your baby, you got to go to the doctor for doctor's visits for the baby and for yourself. And they always have a questionnaire that's like, Mom, this is for you. How do you feel? Have you thought about harming yourself in the last 7 days? Have you thought about harming the baby? You know, and everything, you know, have you cried? Have you like been able to see the happy side of things? Like all these questions, I was being like, yeah, I'm happy. Yeah, I haven't cried. Just lying because I felt like if I put the truth on there, that they were going to think I was a bad mom. CPS was going to get called, you know, like all this stuff. But the truth is, it's really just a questionnaire for moms to see where you're at because they want you to be better and feel better. You know, I could have, if I had answered those questions truthfully, my doctor would have been like, okay, well, maybe we need to start considering some kind of medication for you. You know, I had one of my really good friends, we were going through postpartum depression around around the same time. And she was like, oh, I'm getting some meds. Okay. And she, oh, okay. She works in the hospital setting. She was happy. And I just looked at her and I was like, oh my gosh, I should probably do that. And I just didn't do it because again, I felt like I would be a failure. You know, even though I thought it was fine for my friend to do it, for me to do it, I was like, no, I'll be a failure if I do that. So, you know, there's no shame in it. And this time around, I was ready. I had a therapist. I told my therapist, like, hey, I had postpartum depression before. Watch me, you know, as we have our sessions, if you know, you know. And so, you know, she's been very instrumental in helping me just kind of make sure I check in with myself, check in with her that I don't have postpartum depression this time around. And this time I'm like, look, Meg, prescription do you want? Go research yourself. So when you talk to your doctor, if you need this, you can be like, I have looked at these lists of medications. Do you recommend any of these for me? Like, just being more proactive with it this time, because there's no shame in it. Because at the end of the day, your kids need a happy and healthy mom, right? And it doesn't matter if it means you have to get on medication to be that kind of mother for them. It's important that they have that.
Yeah. No, that's like the first thing that you said really reminds me of myself as far as having prepartum depression, as far as like not having the support. Now, keep in mind, like I literally live a mile away from my parents and I pretty much always have since I've been in LA. But I do have a tendency to isolate when I am depressed. And so my mom, you know, my mom was here, like she was definitely around. She would definitely like try to like get me out the house and like do stuff. But I was just, I don't know. I just when I want to isolate, I just dig in and I'm just like on the couch and I'm just like, no, I gotta see what Detective Stabler is, you know, is up to on Law and Order. You know what I'm saying? This week, like, I really, you know, I can't fuck with y'all right now. Like, this is real. This is real, like, serious. I gotta solve these crimes. But with my mother and her mom, my grandmother, because my grandmother passed away, had a really, I would say, I think contentious is an appropriate word. They had a really contentious relationship. And when my mother got married to my biological father, my grandmother was very much against it and very much let my mother know, basically, like, you know, you married this man and you, like, you're a failure. Now, my grandmother had her own issues. She was very, very wrong about that. But when my mother got pregnant, a couple months after my parents got married, my mother's from New York City. And at this point in time, she was living in upstate New York. And so she really did feel alone a lot. And even though my dad was there, my dad was working and my mom had to stop going to a journalism school because the nausea and the morning sickness, but she felt very much alone. And because she didn't have a lot of support, you know, after she had me, it was, to hear my mother tell it, I was born in December, at the end of December. So if you can imagine how upstate New York is at the end of December, it's basically Canada. And it's just blizzard conditions and it's dark and, you know, there's not a lot of daylight. And so that didn't help as well. Eventually, my grandmother did come to help out with me, which from what my mom told me was definitely, you know, helpful and a relief. But at the same time, I think not having support and like we talked about, like societal expectations of, you know, oh, like you're a mom now, like this is, you know, like I can only imagine in the 70s, like let's not even talk about right now. I can't imagine how in the 70s it was just like it was pushed onto women like, well, okay, so you in your early 20s, you got to get married, which to me is like, that's just crazy. Like when I was in my early 20s, I was out here, like really like feeling myself. But you got to get married. And then, you know, like being a mother is like the most fulfilling, you know, role you'll ever have in your life. When to a lot of women, like what they choose as their profession may be very fulfilling.
Right. And I think that's something that was hard for me because I had, you know, I had my son at 33. So I had been in my profession. Well, I'd been a career woman for at least 13 years. So it was kind of like, I'm doing well. I love what I do. Now I have to switch gears and care about somebody when I've been caring about myself for so long. You know, it's just a harder transition that I think people don't put enough emphasis on. So you feel like bad because it is hard for you. But that's the truth. It is hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I think, you know, one of the things that was also kind of difficult for me too was seeing like my son's father, like he wanted to participate. But I mean, listen, like we all know, and it's not, even if you don't have a child, or you've ever had a baby, it's not a far reach to know that like when babies are very small, they want their mom. Like yeah. They want their mom. That's it. Not to say that like the dad doesn't help or doesn't play a role or can't bond with the child. But like when those babies wake up in the middle of the night, like they are like, I want my mom. Get out of my face. You with this, you know, man energy, like get out of here. I don't even want to hear it. And so, I mean, that's if you're in a heterosexual relationship.
I'm laughing because that's how my daughter is right now. I'm like, this is her every day. She'd be looking at my fiance, her father, like, yeah, like, right, who are you? Right. I'm like, girl, that is your dad. She okay, like, you see him every day of your life. He holds you every day. Stop acting like that.
She like, and like, I can't feed off of him. Like, what's your purpose? Right. So it's at every turn as a mom, you just feel societally, you feel like a failure. Personally, you feel like a failure because you may not be like, oh my God, like all my dreams came true. When, you know, my dream was to be a doctor. Like I honestly, and I've said this to my son, this is going to sound terrible, but I was like, listen, I really didn't want kids. I'm like, I'm said, now you are the best child someone who didn't want kids could have ever gotten because he's just so like sweet and easy and like just agreeable and just like super awesome. But like, I know how I was as a kid and I was like, please God, I do not want to deal with a small version of me like that. Like I was just a mess for a lot of reasons. I had, you know, a lot like trauma and loss and stuff in my life as a young kid, but I was like, please, I don't want to deal with me. Like I can't, I can't even deal with me as an adult. I don't want to deal with a smaller version of me. But as mothers at every turn, we're kind of being told that, you know, or even, oh, this is my favorite. Like I remember being pregnant and it was kind of when it started this fascination with women who have babies and snap back super quickly.
Oh yeah.
Like it, I remember you know, being at the grocery store and like looking at tabloids and it was like so-and-so had a baby like 3 days ago and she's it was this chick, it was some model who was like in a Victoria's Secret show. And this this bitch had a baby like literally like 5 days or some shit before the runway show. And this bitch was out here, every ab. Ab that you, and I was like, okay, I'm like, this is sick. Like, even if I'm like, girl, even if you could snap back, I mean, congratulations, I guess. Like if that was your goal, but I'm like, this is not cool. Like that's really not, it's first of all, it's unusual. Second of all, we don't need to glorify this. Right. Having a baby, like your body should look dilapidated because there was like a little person inside of it. And now there's like this, you know, like it takes a while for it to snap back. Now, listen, when I did snap back, I was like, oh my God, the human body is amazing. But at the same time, I was still in awe, like, holy shit. Like I had a baby like 5 months ago and here I am at a party. Like what? Like look at nature. I was like, this is crazy. But like legit, there's way, way too many pressures that are placed on women who want to have a baby. And then once they do have a baby, it's like there's so many points where they're being told that like, you're not doing it good enough. You don't have your pre-baby body, your PBB back. You don't, you know, are you breastfeeding? Oh, don't even get me started about like, oh, are you formula feeding? Like some women can't lactate that way.
And it's hard.
It's hard.
It's hard. I mean, it took me, I had so many issues even with this. The first one I was like, I'm gonna just pump. And so that didn't, you know, after he started getting bigger, he used more formula and I just stopped pumping at 6 months. But this one I was like, okay, let me try to breastfeed. I had to get this baby had a tongue tie, a lip tie, had to get that corrected. My nipples was falling off. Okay. It was hurting so bad. Girl. It took like 6 weeks of consistent feeding. Wow. Like from my breast, plus two different lactation consultants to finally breastfeed correctly. That's a lot. And if I couldn't have done that the first time around. I didn't have that in me to do because it's hard, you know? And I didn't realize it was going to be that hard because people just make it seem like, you just breastfeed. Yeah, breast is best. That's hard. It's not fun. And no, every day I'd be looking like, is there a way we can end this and you still get the benefits of my breast milk? Because I am tired.
Right. Well, yeah. And that's the other thing. Now, listen, I wish that we would have been pregnant at the same time because I had so much breast milk saved.
Oh my gosh, I love it. See,
like, I was just like, oh my God, I just felt like a cow. I was, and I didn't know that breast tissue extends like it starts like below your shoulders.
Yeah.
It's not just like where we, you know, consider like breasts to be. Like it hurt my neck and my like shoulders so much. But that being said, we just as a society just put so much pressure on women, period. Then you have a baby and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, please. And don't even like try to like, you know, go to a mommy and me class because then all these other chicks are like, oh, well, I did this and I did that and da, da, da. And people are comparing and contrasting. And it drove me crazy. It just drove me crazy. I was just like, you know what? I do what I do. Right. Y'all do you. Like, I don't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And then I think also, you know, culturally speaking, when it comes to, you know, Black women, you know, we, because of slavery, we were unfortunately oftentimes like white women, white mothers, wet nurses. And so, and because of this over-sexualization of our bodies, we have oftentimes been thought of as, you know, being more fertile when sometimes that's not the case. So there are women, like I have like one of my best friends, she had IVF because after a while, like she was trying to get pregnant and it just wasn't working. And that's what worked for her. But, you know, there's also a lot of guilt that surrounds that. You know, I think when it comes to Black women, we have unfortunately internalized a lot of what, you know, whiteness and white supremacy have told us even about our own bodies. And so we are a little bit reticent to talk about our struggles as far as like maybe even getting pregnant or being happy being pregnant or being happy with a child. Like we, you know, or just, you know, anything postpartum, it's like, well, you know, you should be happy. Like this is a blessing and da, da, da. And it's like, yeah, it is a blessing, but you know what else is a blessing? Rain. And you know what also cannot be a blessing? A hurricane. So like, Having a baby is like a hurricane that you like you thought you could prepare for, but like then you realize there's no umbrella that's going to be able to like give you like any type of respite from all the stuff that you're dealing with. You know, I just think that, you know, we as a society need to make maternity leave a lot longer. In California, men can get paternity leave, I believe now, for up to 3 months, which is so important.
Yeah.
That is good. So important. That's beautiful. It is. Because I was terrified of being alone with my son when he was small. Because I was like, I don't know. I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah. I've no idea what I'm doing. Even though like I'm with him day in, day out. I'm like, what happens if he starts crying and then he doesn't stop crying? Like to this day, I can't, like, I just have this thing about like hearing babies cry. It makes me feel so like helpless.
Ooh, don't come over here, girl, because I be letting her cry. She cried a lot, my baby. She's a crybaby. So I'll just be like, well, you okay? You're breathing? You're good? Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Let you cry for a little bit.
That's true. It's like you are breathing, so it's fine. Girl, you're so funny.
You're breathing. You're crying.
Yeah, you're fine. You're fine.
But wait, I wanted to ask you this. What are some, I know we've been talking about postpartum depression. What are some symptoms I guess people should watch out for?
You know, like honestly, the symptoms of postpartum depression are very similar to what we consider to be the symptoms of depression. So, you know, if you obviously feel sad, if you feel depressed, if you're having issues with your sleep, either sleeping too much or sleeping too little, changes in appetite, changes in your energy, are you fatigued all the time? Also, if you are having feelings of guilt and shame, if you are losing an interest in, if you're losing interest in like your usual activities, like if you know that you take a walk like twice a day, cause like that's what you like to do. And then you start to isolate more. Anxiety can definitely be a symptom of depression and postpartum, postpartum depression. And also if you obviously start to have serious thoughts of wanting to not be here, meaning, oh, life would be so much better or my loved ones would be so much happier if I wasn't here, which is also just known as, you know, potentially having suicidal ideation. When postpartum depression can get really, really bad, which is also similar to depression, sometimes when people get depressed, they may start to experience another type of psychiatric symptom, which is psychosis. And that can include having delusions, having hallucinations. And that can be very, very serious because there have been cases where women have murdered their own children because they may have heard a voice that told them like, oh, the voice told me that, you know, if I kill myself and I kill my kids, let's say, that everything will be better. My kids will be happier because I'm just a horrible mother. I'm kind of making some of this up, but some of this is also stuff that patients have told me when I've treated them in the past. So, so postpartum depression can look a lot like regular, almost said regular degula, but regular depression. And it's just something that you really have to watch out for. Like Meg said, I would just really be very, very honest when you do go on your checkups. Because I will freely admit, it was like, how are you? Are you crying? Like, how are you doing? Like, I'm fine. I just don't leave the house all day. And I just, you know, like think about how much of a failure I am. I'm great. How are you? So, those are basically the symptoms of postpartum depression. I just really, really would like for anybody out there who's listening, who is dealing with postpartum depression, just to know that it's not your fault. And please don't feel like you can't say anything. Like, please don't feel like you can't, you know, open your mouth and express how you're feeling. I know that like when I'm depressed, I don't even want to like talk or acknowledge how I feel because that too can just be so overwhelming. But it's important that you get those feelings out. And so that's why it's important that, you know, if someone is listening and you may have, you know, a loved one who you think might be going through postpartum depression, you know, like talk to them, like, you know, even if it's like via text or just, you know, get them to just express themselves so that they can hear themselves. Sometimes that's helpful. Like, oh my God, like maybe I really am depressed. Like I never even really said these things out loud or wrote them out. And also just, you know, if there's one wish I had with everybody who had postpartum depression, it would just be like, just like Megan said earlier, like just give yourself some grace. Like you are not perfect and that is okay. It's okay. Yep. And there is help out there for everybody. There's help out there for you.
Yeah. And you can, and one thing I didn't know, I mean, you can talk to your, you know, obviously your OBGYN can help you with this. So for that 6-week checkup that mommies have, like, that's a great, like they're wanting to hear that from you. They're very, like, they know that this is going on. They know it's a big thing that more women have postpartum depression than will actually tell them. So during that 6 weeks checkup, talk to them about it. You can talk to them about it before. You know, a lot of doctors have portals now. Send that, send the question over to them and say, hey, I think I'm having some symptoms of postpartum depression. I need to talk to someone. Like, they understand what's going on. You can also talk to your child's pediatrician, which I didn't know that.
Yes.
They can point you in the right direction of where you need to go because they're also asking those questions. And I didn't know that. So that's good to know because you see, you probably see your child's pediatrician before you see your own OBGYN.
Yes.
For your own checkup. So
yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yes, you do. And also as a physician, we are trained to screen for these things because prenatal and postpartum depression affect up to 20% of women in the United States. And that's 1 out of 5. So
we and that's definitely, probably more. That's only the ones that we know about, not the ones who will actually tell us.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. So we are trained to screen for these, you know, for depression, for prepartum and postpartum. So if you need the help, it's out there. Please don't feel ashamed. Like if anything, you know, you don't have to do this by yourself and you shouldn't be doing it by yourself because that's why psychiatrists exist and physicians exist and pediatricians know to ask and your OB-GYN knows to screen for that. So I hope that anybody out there who's dealing with any type of depression, but especially prepartum, postpartum depression, I hope that, you know, this was helpful and I hope that you're able to find the help and relief that you need. So Meg, thank you so much for your thoughts. Thank you so much for all your honesty. I know that I'm oftentimes very open about my struggles and I just really want to say thank you for being so open and honest about your struggles with depression and postpartum depression. This has been an awesome conversation. Yeah.
Yes.
So I want to switch gears and lighten things up with my favorite segment, Pop Culture Diagnosis. Pop Culture Diagnosis is a segment where we take a person or character from a TV show or movie and assess their mental state, or, as we say in the medical field, figure out what the hell is going on with them. Meg, can you give listeners a quick synopsis of the wildly successful movie Encanto and who in particular you wanted to diagnose today?
Yes. Now, Encanto has blown up since its streaming premiere on Disney, and I'm going to tell you, it is like my son. Always, mind you, he's only 3, so he has seen like bits and pieces of the movie because he doesn't have a full attention span. But the one thing he knows is that song, "They Don't Talk About Bruno, No." And like, I will hear random kids singing that before I really knew what it was. I was like, who is Bruno? Like, what are they talking about? And it's from the movie Encanto. And Encanto, the award-winning movie Encanto, I will say, because it is that great. It centers on the Madrigals, who are a family who have these, everybody in the family has some kind of like magical power. Encanto is the place where they live in the mountains of Colombia. And it's just a really like beautiful story. But the thing about it is, This is probably one of the first Disney movies that I've seen that I really thought about. Like, there's a lot of intergenerational trauma within this movie. And, you know, like, a lot of Disney movies have it. But this one shows, like, how what happened to the grandmother affected her kids, which affected their kids. And, you know, the person that we're going to talk about is the highly ostracized uncle, which is Bruno. And he's the main character, Mirabelle's uncle. He basically, his magical gift was to see the future. And he, you know, spoiler alert, so fast forward if you want to hear it. But he basically tells, you know, he sees what's going to happen with his family. And because he doesn't want Mirabelle, people to look down on her because it's kind of going to come from her, he decides that he'd rather just kind of like live in isolation. Nobody knows where he is. You know, he kind of just goes into hiding and conceals himself because he just doesn't want that burden to be on her. Because when he tells his vision, people seem to think that he's conjuring up like an evil future. And he's like, no, that's really what's going to happen. So we're going to talk about Bruno today. We are talking about Bruno. I just had to do that. We're going to talk about Bruno today. So what do you think about this movie and Bruno in particular, Imani?
So it's funny, like, when it comes to Disney movies, I mean, you know, we all love Disney movies, but Disney movies in particular, like, always get me, like, so emotional. Like, I don't know, like, there was that little short Bow about the mom. Did you see that one? Like, it was,
yeah.
It was, before Incredibles 2, which is like, I cried at the Incredibles. Like, I'm just like that person. but me and my son were like in the movie theater, like bawling at like Bao. I saw Red Panda recently. Like, I was just like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, I totally understand this. And I never saw Encanto. And especially because my son's a little older, he's like, you know, obviously he's, mm-hmm. you know, he's 15. He's like, I'm not watching that. But when I saw Encanto, and when I saw the musical number, like, We Don't Talk About Bruno, like, it made me so sad.
Yeah.
Like, it made me so sad. I was just like, oh my God, I can't, like, poor Bruno. Like, it just, yeah. like, anytime there's, you know, anyone who's really, like, really, like, I know anyone who's really, really mentally ill, it just really, like, my heart just goes out to them, which, you know, explains a lot about why I chose psychiatry as a career. But I was just like, oh my God, this makes me so sad. Part of it too, I think, is because I have a cousin, one of my cousins in my family. He has issues with psychosis, and he will, you know, he hears voices, he has delusions. And he doesn't take medication, and that's his right. He's an adult. He doesn't have to. I mean, the rest of my family wishes that he would, but it just kind of reminded me of my cousin who it pretty much isolates to himself because he has voices that he can talk to, and he's, you yeah. know, completely like happy with that. And, you know, and to our best efforts, as far as my family, like, he's just like, no, this is where I want to be. And like, this is my right, which it is. But that being said, when I saw Bruno and kind of like the state that he was in, like, he's mm-hmm. in the dark, and, yeah. you know, he's like, he loves his family so much, but like, it's like he doesn't want to like bother them. Like, he wants to help them from afar. It just really, really made me sad. But I also loved how Encanto was able to really tackle like such heavy topics. Like, first of all, you mentioned intergenerational trauma, which is a very real thing. And yeah. There is a doctor named Rachel Yehuda, and she has done studies of the offspring, the children, and I believe also the grandchildren of Holocaust survivors, and was mm-hmm. able to show how there actually are, I believe, genetic changes to DNA in that are passed down. So even though, for example, someone could have gone through trauma in their life, their DNA would get passed down to their offspring, and then their offspring would, you know, have children. But like, there are genetic changes that occur that yeah. make the offspring more likely to be very anxious or depressed, for example. So I really liked how, you know, Encanto obviously didn't get into all of that, but it did get into the fact that like his mother had suffered a lot of trauma, and that kind of ended up fracturing the family, and how it can be really difficult if you are a survivor of trauma or a victim of trauma, how it can be really difficult for you to kind of empathize or recognize, rather, when you have kids who are also dealing with trauma, and maybe you do recognize that there's trauma there, but that you just don't know like how to deal with it. And I just really loved how this story was able to tell it, and how it basically just unfolded, and it's for kids, right?
Yeah,
which is the wildest thing.
Yeah, because, you know, when I watched it too, it wasn't like some of these themes didn't stick out until I like sat down and thought about it. But it's good that they put this in the movie because it's a good talking point for a lot of families. Because, you know, you think about it, these kids are usually watching Disney movies with their parents mm-hmm. or with family. So it's good that it's in there because, you know, Mirabelle has, you know, she deals with being like the glue to her family. There's always that person in the family, right? Then you have her sister, Isabel, who's dealing with like perfection. Like she's expected to be perfect. So, but on the inside, she's like, I'm not perfect. And then you have the other sister, Luisa, who's like expected to be super strong in every way. Mm-hmm. She's like, there's times that I'm not strong, you know? And so there's always that person in your family. So I'm glad that this movie kind of tackles all of those things.
Yeah, for sure. Because when I think about the Disney shows, not Disney shows, but Disney movies of my youth, it was like, they weren't really making any. It was like Cinderella, Snow White, right. You know, and it was basically like, oh my God, I have to be cute so I can find a man. And then like all my answers, right. Like I'm all my prayers would be, yeah, I have to find my Prince Charming, which is like, huh? Like, this is stupid.
Right.
So I was really, really impressed that Disney was able to really tackle this on. When it comes to mm-hmm. Bruno, you know, my first thought as far as diagnosis is, like, my first thought was, okay, this is somebody who may have schizophrenia. Some of the things like his visions, which could also, you know, be, I mean, I think it can be kind of analogous to hallucinations, and especially in terms of like him being able to foresee the future. You know, that may have to do with like hallucinations or delusions. But I just love the fact that at the end, he wasn't ostracized. And when he reunites with his mom, like his mom was just so happy to see him. Yeah. And it wasn't like, oh my God, like you're crazy or what's wrong with you or, you know, why you live in, you know, in the house and, you know, trying to patch things up with spackle. And I mean, it was just like, this movie was just so dope.
I don't know, that part I thought he was a little crazy for. Like, bro, you live in the walls. Like, you know, that part I was like, Bruno, you either need to just leave. Like, don't live in the walls. That's creepy, okay?
Yes. It was definitely creepy. I mean, having a whole bunch of rat friends was creepy too.
Right.
But I mean, I even love the fact that like, you know, like Bruno's outfits were kind of like dark. You know, yeah, because he lived like he was in hiding. But I really just love the inclusiveness of this movie. Mm-hmm. I loved, you know, again, this song where everybody's basically saying like, oh, we don't talk about him. Like, we don't talk about him because, you know, like it's just too painful. But it did something about this movie reminded me of this. There was a story that was written by, it was in the Washington Post, and it was by this guy named Dick Russell. And this guy, Dick Russell, has a son who's an adult, and his son is schizophrenic. And one of the things that I remember in training when I was a psychiatry resident learning about is that when it comes to people who have a psychotic disorder like schizophrenia, let's say, worldwide, schizophrenics actually fare better in societies that are not very westernized because they're not ostracized. Like their delusions, their hallucinations are more so seen as a gift. And so this man, Dick Russell, has a son, and his son was on medications and gained all this weight and, you know, was at risk for diabetes or did develop diabetes because of it was a side effect of the medications. But that being said, he took his son to Western Africa and was able to have his son spend time with a shaman there, and how this particular shaman basically taught him to kind of lean into his symptoms, as we would say in Western medicine, which made him feel validated, and he didn't feel like ostracized from society. And he actually, you know, did really well during his time over there. And so it's awesome, right? Like it's really cool. Yeah. Something that's also interesting when it comes to psychotic disorders is that the more westernized a society, and I'm very much oversimplifying, but the more westernized a society gets, the more like the likelihood increases that people who have psychotic disorders experience paranoia. So like if, you know, like think of the 24-hour news cycle. And it's like, you know, shootings and like robberies and this happened and that happened. It's like when you live in a society where that is oftentimes reported, let's say, I think, and this is me just kind of postulating, I think that it tends to manifest itself in people who have psychotic disorders as having their delusions and hallucinations be more scary to them. Whereas if you're in a, whereas if you're in a society that isn't very westernized, it's, you know, and you're also being like applauded by the people in your society, like, oh my God, like you hallucinate, like that's so cool. Like, tell me about my future. Tell me about this. You know, it doesn't lead to the person feeling, you know, negative or even experiencing like more, I would say more of the negative type symptoms of schizophrenia. So I just thought that that was really interesting. And I thought that, you know, again, Encanto did a really good job of just embracing their relative who it is definitely of them and comes from them, but just, you know, his gift is a little bit different. So I really like that. And I thought this was a really like awesome movie. So good job, Disney, on, you know, presenting this to little kids and also their parents or their, you know, whoever took them to the movies that day. So that's it for Pop Culture Diagnosis. We're going to have another fun character to analyze next week. If you have suggestions for fictional characters out there that you want me to diagnose, hit me up on Twitter at Dr_Imani or email the show at hello@ImaniStateOfMind.com. Thank you so much for listening to Imani State of Mind. Thank you to Meg for co-hosting, as always. We'll be back for an all-new episode next week. And let's keep the conversation going. Follow the show on Instagram at Imani State of Mind. And again, email us at hello@ImaniStateOfMind.com. This is a Crooked Media production. Our executive producer is Sandy Gerard. Our producer is Leslie Martin. Music from Vasilis Fotopoulos. Edited by Veronica Simonetti. And special thanks to Brandon Williams, Gabby Leverett, Milani Johnson, and Martin DeGroat for promotional support.